Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Our next conversation today is with Jesse Danielson, state senator, who is also running as a Democratic candidate for Secretary of State. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with how much of you wanting to be Secretary of State has to do with taking on President Trump and his attacks on Colorado's election system?
Well, Marshall, it's not just that. I helped build the system that we have here in Colorado. Vote by mail, in-person vote centers, same-day registration, automatic voter registration, increasing access for voters across the state and strengthening our democracy has been a major policy focus of my entire career. But I can't not acknowledge the unprecedented attacks that Donald Trump has already waged on Colorado's election systems. He loves to attack the system that I built over these many years. So yes, it's part of it. We really need a strong person in the Secretary of State's office with some experience of standing up to power to protect our rights.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that you helped craft. When you were director of America Votes, which is a progressive voter rights organization, Colorado drafted the bill to make all elections mail-in ballots. Mm-hmm. Again, you take credit for helping lead the group that wrote that. The Trump administration is targeting states with all mail-in ballots. Mm-hmm. What changes would you make to Colorado's mail-in election system?
Well, I think there's always room for improvement. But part of what we built into each and every one of these laws that I've worked on over these many years is accountability, auditing, testing, and we've been able to prove, when tested time and time again, that there's no evidence of any widespread fraud, that Colorado's elections are safe, the mail-in balloting is very secure, and overwhelmingly, regardless of party, Republicans, unaffiliateds, and Democrats alike overwhelmingly prefer to utilize that method of voting. So while I think there's always room for improvement, we have built a very secure and convenient system.
Would you do anything to enhance election integrity in the state? Again, under the guise of President Trump or MAGA Republicans attacking with unproven election rigging claims of mail-in systems or Colorado's election system, what needs to be done to enhance election integrity?
What I would say is what they are focused on is seeding doubt and spreading misinformation, lying to Colorado voters about the existence of this fraud. So what I would say is one primary obligation that the Secretary of State needs to have moving forward is to consistently and constantly communicate out to the electorate about what our rights really are, about how the elections function, and maintaining that confidence that the voters of the state of Colorado have in the existing system. We do need to constantly be aware of room for improvement in physical security, in cybersecurity, and maintaining and improving the systems. But keep in mind that what Donald Trump is accusing our systems of is false. And so it's reassuring the public. And then working with the different departments and across government entities around the state to enforce with the electorate and just our residents and friends across Colorado that we are lucky to be able to vote in a state where we have such accessible and secure systems.
I should have asked this prior with the mail-in ballot question, but I want to ask about trust in the mail-in elections and the Postal Service. Mm-hmm. Amber McReynolds, a former Denver election director, is chair of the Postal Service Board of Directors. Do you trust the Postal Service and the board chair in delivering and processing mail-in ballots?
Yes. And I'll go a little further. I actually worked with Amber McReynolds when she was at the Denver County Clerk's office when we crafted the big bill in 2013 that established vote by mail, vote center, same day registration, that big measure. She was integral in its crafting, as I was. And so I not only know her by reputation, but I know Amber. And the work that we did together those years ago laid the groundwork for so many improvements that have come since then. The second thing that I would say is that I also know the United States Postal Service And letter carriers who make up the Postal Service are great American patriots who have taken the same oath to the Constitution that, you know, other public servants, even the President of the United States, has taken to uphold it. And I know that they will work diligently to protect it, that you, Marshall, your viewers, and I, we all know that the United States Constitution says elections are run by the states, and you can't just issue some executive order that upends that. And I know that the hardworking and dedicated folks at the USPS and the letter carriers that make it run are equally dedicated to that.
One of the bills you referenced that became law that you helped write was automatic voter registration. People can automatically register to vote when they get a driver's license or renew their license. They register even if they don't want to or intend to vote. So there are Coloradans who are automatically registered to vote who never will intend to turn in a ballot. When election deniers talk about inflated voter rolls, aren't you handing them that argument?
Well, no, because we also have systems built into place to remove voters who don't participate for a long time, to clean up the rolls, et cetera, et cetera. Those have been longstanding. And if a voter, so say you interact with the system, like you said, when I wrote and carried that bill and passed it through the legislature, what we put into place was you're automatically registered. And if you indicate to the government that you don't want to be a voter, then they will take you off. So the voter does have an opportunity to opt out. But if they don't participate, it's just like any other cleanup of our rolls, where they won't just hang out forever. And that's just the policy that the clerks and the Secretary of State over years have come to recognize as the most effective and serves the public well.
When you're signed up for email lists or something that you didn't choose to do, it was a default opt-in, why is the system for voting in this state not opt-in versus what you've created, where I have to opt out to become a registered voter?
Well, it's a good question, and we debated that. That was part of the whole negotiation and that, you know, a long effort to create this policy. In the end, what the public demanded of us, the coalition that was supportive of the measure, the county clerks, the clerks association, municipal administrators, tribal administrators, the whole broad community said, when it comes to voting, we believe that automatically registering someone is going to break down so many barriers for those who do wish to participate but haven't taken the extra step to go into the DMV and fill in a voter registration form, that is more important than the few who will need to then opt out. And so it was a balance and kind of a demand of the public to say, we're here already, we're interacting with the state of Colorado. If you wish to opt out, it's easy, but everyone agreed that when it came to that question, that balance, it was when it comes to your vote, the right to vote, that if you're registered to vote and you decide to that day, then you should be able to, rather than having to take the steps and do extra work. So it was just a balance of what was the most important to most people across the state.
When you helped write these laws as part of the Progressive Voter Rights Organization, America Votes, I'm going to ask you this from the flip. If you're Secretary of State, would you invite progressive activists to help you write future election bills?
So I think what I would do is how I've done. And that's also a big distinction in this particular primary, is that I have worked on election law for a long time, but I've also worked on issues facing older Coloradans or working families or the Native community or environmental protections. Many different policy areas, but the way that I've always made laws is by consulting with and partnering with the communities that the law will impact. As Secretary of State, it wouldn't just be partisan activists, it would be election experts of all kinds. And so since I have that experience of building those coalitions and managing them and working through them, I think I have a real leg up in this primary, because it would be, I think, essential to bring in the community voices from across the state, but balanced. And so you don't just have voting rights groups and you don't just have elections administrators, but that everyone in this community has a chance to weigh in. And sometimes the way I like to say it, Marshall, is I was working with advocates who would have liked to have had a ballot box in every living room. And I don't blame them, because that would undoubtedly make things easier for voters. However, I also worked with the people who actually have to administer the elections. And so when we crafted these laws, you had to have a balance between many different perspectives in order to craft the policy that was right.
Military and overseas voters can vote electronically. Mm-hmm. So I guess I should ask, why can't every voter have that same opportunity and vote from their living room?
Well, I think that we have to afford the military and overseas voters a little bit more of ease in voting, given that they're there for their service. We have also expanded voting rights for other, say, print-disabled folks. This was a debate a few years ago. I carried policy that, so I have to admit, even though I've worked with the disability rights community on lots of other issues, they came to me to say, okay, here's the deal. I'm blind, and I can't vote a private ballot, and I don't think that that's right. Okay, well, I'm a sighted person, and I hadn't considered that kind of a barrier. And so we figured out a way for blind people to vote a private ballot, and it did involve adjusting the electronic involvement so that you would vote the ballot before you print it out, which is, again, another difference between my opponent and me, who actually came to the Capitol to oppose that measure. So we are, when possible, seeking and innovating in order to serve the voters who need it the most.
Let me go back on the activists. I asked you specifically about progressive activists. What if a right-leaning activist, an advanced Colorado, wanted to help craft future election laws? Would they be invited?
I think that everybody has a seat at the table. I think that there are some organizations that don't agree with our current system, that don't agree even with mail balloting at all. So yes, there will be an open door and always thoughtful consideration, but it will, again, be in balance with the other groups. So yeah, I think that it's fair to say that folks have a seat at the table, no matter what their partisan leaning may be.
You were seeking to replace two-term Secretary of State Jenna Griswold. Mm-hmm. What's the best thing you think Griswold has done as Secretary of State?
Secretary Griswold has faced, again, a very unique time, challenging times. She has stood up to President Trump when called upon, protected our data, refused to hand over certain data, and has, you know, she partnered with me on policy inside the Capitol. And so again, when we were doing things like automatic voter registration, that was when she was the Secretary of State. And so we relied upon each other there. We could work and negotiate with her office to get the input of the Secretary of State and, again, make those policies better, had her support on those legislative efforts as well. And so, you know, and I've seen her show up for other bills that I've done, too, or other policy areas like union work and working families. And so I can say that that was helpful, too. But in terms of the voting rights, you know, some of her predecessors say when we were crafting the policy in 2013, they were engaging in the same kind of voter suppression activity that Donald Trump and the, you know, some of other folks out in the world are doing now then. So we couldn't partner with the Secretary of State because he was dead set against the kinds of systems we were putting into place. So it's been fantastic to have the current secretary as a partner in these legislative efforts.
How did a previous Republican, I assume, Secretary of State suppress voter participation?
It was the same kind of thing that you see now, challenging citizenship, coming up with ways to keep people from participating that I, at the time, found wrong, and also a vehement opponent of that effort that we were moving in 2013. And so even though the clerks across the state, the Clerks Association, and elections administrators at all levels were on board and working with us, that former secretary wasn't a partner like we've had with Secretary Griswold.
Is that Scott Gessler? Is that where we're at?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we just need to be clear that who we're talking about. What is something that the current Secretary of State, Griswold, has done that you disagree with?
You know, I don't know that I really want to talk about, you know, disagreements with the current secretary. If there was something in particular that you were thinking?
No, I mean, it's a list that you could choose from of just her history, but, like, do you think a voter would know, like, if they're unhappy? Maybe there's a voter out there deciding between the two of you, between you and Amanda Gonzalez, that want to hear your opinions on how the current secretary has done her role, if you are lockstep in everything she's done, or if there's something that you say, whoa, like, I would have never done that.
No, I don't think that I would step out and say that right now.
Okay. Redistricting. Colorado voters may be asked in November to redraw the congressional district for the 2028 election. That would change the state's 4 Republican and 4 Democratic congressional seats into likely 7 Democrats and 1 Republican. Do you support the change in asking voters to allow redistricting in 2028?
The ballot measure that's going to be in front of us this year.
Yeah.
Yes, I support it.
Do you support gerrymandering in general or just when Republicans do it?
I don't think anybody likes the idea of gerrymandering. I think right now what we have is a system that doesn't really serve the voters of the state of Colorado in terms of the congressional representation that we have in Washington, D.C. 4 and 4, that's just not the makeup of our state. And so I believe that the current system that we have is actually depriving many voters of their voice in Washington, D.C., because clearly that is not the makeup of, that is not the way that voters act and vote in our state. So we do need to take bold action right now because we are, again, and I know that you started the interview saying, like, let's not focus too much on Trump. However, he's gone to Republican legislatures around the country to say, give me more seats. They are obliging him. And so to stand up for our own democracy, we have to take some bolder steps. And I believe that the current system is not serving the people of the state.
Those feel like two different arguments, combating what the president and Republicans are doing in red states versus your belief that you just said that you don't think 4 and 4 is the correct makeup of Colorado. That's a different argument than we should combat what red states are doing. It sounds like 4-4 is not your preference in how you think Colorado should look.
It's not just not my preference. It doesn't reflect the makeup of the Colorado electorate. And so that is where the current system fails us. And that is why I would favor a change.
So what would, under this system, what voters would be asked in 2028, if voters approve it this year, in 2028 the map would change. And then in 2030, this independent redistricting committee comes back that drew a map that you don't agree with. So does something have to change with the rules that the independent redistricting committee must follow?
I suppose that that's a possibility, but I think immediately the question was, do I support the measure? And I have to say yes. This is where we're at right now.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about your bill history. You've been in a position as a lawmaker to sponsor election-related bills. I checked over the last 4 years, and I think all I found were 2 bills specifically that deal with elections. One to allow firefighters to put collective bargaining on a general election ballot, and one about who can watch a recount take place. You're asking voters to trust you to oversee elections, so why does your legislative record show elections weren't high among your legislative priorities?
Well, we also have to think about ballot access for voters with disabilities, voting rights for people with disabilities, and automatic voter registration.
And but that goes back almost, that last one's more than a decade.
No, that is 2019.
I thought it was 2013, the automatic voter registration.
2019 was House or Senate Bill 19-235, okay. Automatic voter registration.
Okay.
That was mine.
2013 was mail-in ballots. Okay,
yes.
Sorry.
So one of my very first things when I got in the Senate was that big measure establishing for the first time automatic voter registration. Mm-hmm. And so, that was, and my co-prime obviously in the Senate was Steve Fenberg. And so we partnered together on that measure. That was a very big shift.
And I'm not saying you haven't been part of election-related bills. I'm just saying in the last 4 years, leading up to running for this office, there have only been 2 that are specific to elections.
Yeah, I think highlighting, well, another reason I wanted to visit about the automatic voter registration law, too, is because that is another distinction in this race. My opponent claims to have written the bill, but I was the senator who sponsored it, crafted it, negotiated it, managed it, got it through the legislature, and eventually was there when it was signed into law. And so I think it's also worth noting that there is a difference there.
Was she at the table? Like you talked about having people at the table. Was she at the table?
Yeah, but among the four of our prime sponsors, we never really dealt with her. And it does a disservice not just to our efforts, but to the efforts of those who really did on the day-to-day do the difficult work of coming to an agreement on such a massive policy that impacts so many people. It's not even just the legislature, the Department of Revenue, the AG in the governor's offices, the Secretary of State, the municipal representatives, tribal, the clerks, Clerks Association, and of course the other 96 legislators and their constituents. That's a lot of work. That is the higher level experience that, again, that we need when moving forward. So I, you know, that was a big one that I did in 19. And then the two disability rights bills. And then, yes, there have been smaller measures all along. I've also consistently partnered with the Clerks Association and the individual clerks on their annual, what they call, cleanup bill, which may not be a very high-profile piece of legislation each year, but it nonetheless is very important. And while I hadn't carried them in the last several years, always been present and, when called upon, participated in the crafting of those measures. For example, this year, it extends our ability to our window of the amount of time that we have to turn in our ballots, and if needed, established an emergency council to deal with anything that may come at us. And so, again, while the prime sponsorship of some of the bills have come through without my name on it, we've just been ever present.
So, you, real quickly, you support the ballot month, this bill that part of the bill changed it, so instead of 22 days before the election, it'll be 29 days before the election where ballots get sent out. You support making it more like election month?
The bill that we passed this year, yes. Yeah.
One other question on your bill history. A prominent section of your website for Secretary of State is dedicated to your bills fighting for Colorado workers. And under priorities, when you click on the priorities tab, you've got paragraphs that are titled A Fairer Economy, Protecting Women, Safer Communities, and Preserving Colorado. What do those have to do with overseeing elections as Secretary of State?
It is important, and it's very relevant, because what I heard when I went out to the community is people want an elected official in this role that has a proven track record that reflects their values. And also that you can point to say, we know how she's going to behave because we've seen her do it before. So it's a strong progressive statement on working families, on the environment, on, you know, making things more affordable. All of these policies that I've worked on in the past, it is part of why the community came together to say, we need Jessie in this role. We trust her. We've worked with her. She's effective. She's tough. She's done election law and helped craft the system that we know and use and we as Coloradans depend on and love. But we also know this about her because she's done it day in and day out for a long time. They want a trusted voice in this office and a proven leader. And again, my opponent just cannot say that when her experience is very focused at the county level for only a few years. People in the state of Colorado want a proven leader in this role that they can point to. And again, when I say that this office needs to lead with integrity, this is the trusted voice that they have asked to be in this role because we have a history together. When I connect with people on the West Slope or in the Valley or northeastern Colorado where I grew up, there is a sense of trust there that I have built over time. And these relationships so that I have that ability on day one to get started because I have worked with people at all levels of government for a very long time.
I promise we're nearing the end. A couple of quick yes or no, or maybe there's one yes or no. Would you support Colorado ditching partisan primaries and having one open primary with candidates of all voter affiliations?
I'm not sure if I can blatant yes or no to that because what we've seen in the past is when the ideas come forward, they may look very different than what they, you know, what they claim to be.
What California has done this earlier this month for its gubernatorial race or the LA mayor's race, that kind of format where no matter what your political affiliation is, you're on one ballot, and whether it's top two, top four, whatever, just the idea that we get one ballot and you're picking from that.
It has not been a priority of mine. I suppose why my main, I think the important thing that I should say is, if that's the way that the voters of the state of Colorado choose to change our system, what they need, again, is someone in the Secretary of State's office that will diligently implement it through the rulemaking process and carry out the will of the people.
Congress is considering the SAVE Act, and among the changes it would make, it would require ID each time someone votes. What's the harm with requiring a voter to provide ID every time they turn in a ballot?
The thing is here is we're talking about someone's fundamental and sacred right to vote. What we have in place is a system that allows for someone who doesn't have every kind of voter ID, every kind of ID, I should say, at the ready to cast their given right when they need to. I am not in favor of the photo ID laws that Trump has proposed, and believe me, this has been a perennial action that's come forward my entire time in the legislature. There are folks who would like to take us backward and make it more difficult for a lot of people to vote. And photo ID laws are a great example of that. Most people just call them poll taxes, and I certainly would never be on board with changing those laws. And part of how I like to illustrate it with folks who, because it might make sense, well, I need my ID to get a library book, or I need, you know, okay. But we're not talking about something like a bus ride or a plane ticket. We're talking about as an eligible elector in this great nation, in this great state, you have a right to vote. And so for my neighbor, you know, who is older and may not have access to her birth certificate from years ago, I'm going to fight for her right to vote because it's her right, and no one should take that away. So I'm not in favor of burdensome photo ID laws that make it more difficult to vote. We're talking about your one sacred thing that no one can take away from you.
You're running for the Democratic nomination for Secretary of State. Why shouldn't Secretary of State just be an unaffiliated role?
Oh, I'm not sure that it shouldn't. I think that it needs to be as nonpartisan as possible. This is, again, why there was so much support from the elections administrative community, including county clerks around the state, not just of my party, to urge me to run for this seat. I am in this to partner with clerks around the state and other elections administrators, whether they're Republican, Democrat, or unaffiliated, to focus solely on your right to cast a ballot and engage in this system. And so I wouldn't say that it shouldn't be a nonpartisan role. My role will be to protect everyone's access to their polls, to cast their ballots, to vote the way they wish. It would be my job to uphold that right and ensure it. So I think that it needs to be as nonpartisan as possible.
We spent 98% of this interview on elections. I will ask just one or two questions about business, because that's also something the Secretary of State oversees, business registrations. We have previously done a story here at 9 News about a North Glen home that had 16,000 businesses registered to the one address. Westward just did a story where there are 12,000 businesses registered to a downtown Denver building. If there's something illegal going on, the Attorney General's office can file a lawsuit. But my question is, for what responsibility should the Secretary of State's office have to verify that businesses that are registering in Colorado are legit, valid businesses?
This is something that's come up increasingly over the last couple of years, notified my Senate office, brought it to our attention. And when I started my campaign, again, we didn't just throw a fundraiser in Denver and call it a day. I got in my car and I drove around the state to meet with, yes, the elections administrators, the county clerks around the state, voters, community leaders. Part of it was meeting with business leaders, holding roundtable discussions to collect this kind of anecdotal data. How can the office continue its service and, in your opinion, improve it? So this has come up. And also just among my friends and neighbors, more increasingly over time, fraudulent business filings. Yes, we want Colorado to be a state that it is easy to start a business, as easy as it should be, but not so easy that it becomes a burden on the community with fraudulent filings like you just described. And so I do see a place here for I would love to immediately get to work on in terms of addressing this issue. And I think there is space within the department itself. You're right, got to continue to partner with the AG and others and holding people accountable to the current law. But I think there's a great space there to improve. Like I said, we want it to be a place where businesses can flourish. And if you want to start one, it shouldn't be terribly difficult, but it's got to be a balance.
Do you have any specifics on what would be in the power of the Secretary of State's office to verify a business as being legit?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are specifics within the department. I think also there are, so yes, what I would say is we have specific ways that we want to get started, and like I said, working with the Attorney General. But I think there's also, apart from the fraudulent filings, just working with people who are getting started and utilizing the system, we also have heard just maybe some burdensome requirements or a difficulty navigating the system, website utilization, lack of trainings, this kind of thing. I talked with younger business owners, owners in the Black community, this kind of thing, where they brought to my attention some seemingly approachable ideas from the get-go. I can't also overpromise here because you know and your viewers know as well as I do that everybody's under budget constraint. So when we promise improvements, what I want to do is just take it from a realistic perspective. What can we address? How can we do it quickly? And what's the top fire to put out?
Lastly, business registration filing fees went up. They doubled. I think it was $25 to $50. And the money went to fund elections. Do you see a need to raise business registrations again to fund a different part of the office, which is elections?
I'm not sure that I've thought through that exact specific question, Marshall. I think it would be something, again, that we would consider with the business community and the elections community when we move forward following the next election.
Okay. Jesse Danielson, State Senator, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to be here with you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.